Today's reading is from Psalm chapter 46, verse 1 to 11. And then you can find that on page 570 of your church Bibles. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at the break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice. The earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. He says, "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress."
We're thinking this evening about this theme of peace. Peace. And so what we're going to do this evening is think about that theme, where we might be looking for it, how we might go about getting it, how we can find it hard to get it. And then we're going to have a look at this psalm, this song that James just read out. So think about what the Christian message or hope of peace might be. When we think of peace, we can think of it in kind of different ways and can look for it in different ways. We can think of it on a worldwide scale and a need for peace. This coming week marks the 80th anniversary of VE Day, a time when we remember the end of the Second World War in Europe, a time when we remember when peace came. And yet, I was reading just this morning an article reflecting how can we be remembering this when it feels like at the moment across the world, and as we'll know across Europe, it feels like we know anything but peace. We'll know about the conflicts in Ukraine. We'll hear about the conflicts in Gaza and wider afield. We look around the world and we see a real need for peace. But then maybe we can feel it closer to home as well when we look within our own country and even in our own lives. We can look at the things that are going on and feel like there is a lack of peace. Maybe you or someone you know is going through a period of a kind of job insecurity and so they feel anything but peace. They feel unrest at it. Or the cost of living can really feel like a burden and therefore a lack of peace. Or maybe it's things that are going on in our own homes behind closed doors, challenges within our families, and we can feel a need for peace. And I think we can think about peace in a different way. It can be the kind of circumstances that are out there across the world or around our country and need peace in circumstances. But often we can think about peace as a feeling inside. And so for us personally, we might just be feeling that deep down inside, I don't feel at peace. That how I'm feeling is lacking peace. And so with either things that are going on around us or our feelings inside, we can feel anything but peace. In fact, we feel a real uncertainty, not quite sure what the future or even just tomorrow might hold. We can feel a restlessness, never quite feeling at ease. We get to the end of the day and all the jobs are done and the house is tidy and we should be sitting down to relax and we just find ourselves not being able to. A restlessness. We can feel a worry a constant state of worry inside. And so therefore, it's natural then to ask the question, what can I do about it? How can I find peace? And I think the world gives us lots of different answers as we look to the world to tell us, how can I go about getting peace? The world can say, go and do something about it. A kind of activism. What can you do to bring peace? Go and do something. Make a difference. If you're not going to do it, well, who else is going to do it? Or the world can offer different kind of coping strategies to try and manage our feeling or lack of feeling of peace. Maybe the world gives us distractions to kind of turn away from events or feelings that oppose to peace. Maybe it tells us to ignore things or just pretend it's not there. If I ignore it long enough, maybe it'll go away, or I'll pretend it's gone. We can see this in different ways. I was just chatting to someone yesterday who has a busy, intense job, is a lawyer, and she was saying that to kind of get away from it all, her escapism, if you like, is she picks up her phone and goes on Vinted. It's a kind of retail therapy for her, that all her troubles are removed for as long as she's on there, as she just escapes and is lost in that world. But if we find that an activism doesn't work, or a coping strategy, or a turning away doesn't work, well, it feels like the world leaves us with, well, panic. What hope do we have? Will there be peace? And so then we ask the question, well, is it working? Is the world's answers for peace working? And we see the issues in it, because, look, if peace depends on my circumstances, And so the answer to it is to work so hard to try and ensure that any of the circumstances around me are sorted, to be active, to make a difference, to try and sort things out. Oh man, the pressure on me that it's kind of dependent on me to be able to sort things out. Will I be able to do that? And even if I am, how long will it last? Because circumstances change so quickly, it can kind of feel like once I've sorted out one problem, well, another problem is just waiting for me around the corner. Or if peace is managed by using kind of different coping strategies, well, then my peace is so dependent on how I'm feeling. And if circumstances change a lot, well, feelings change multiple times a day. And so if feelings are changing all the time, then my state of being at peace will change all the time. In fact, I could just get exhausted and feel not at peace just through the exercise of trying to find the different exercises or coping strategies to feel at peace. And look, maybe some of these coping strategies, some of these might be helpful for a time. But the danger is that they're just a kind of form of escapism, just a kind of form of avoidance that doesn't deal with the issue that's actually there, that doesn't confront the reality that's there. And the reality is we can't shut out the world forever. It's still there. I don't know if you saw the film a few years ago, Don't Look Up. It's a film about two astronomers who discover that there's a comet heading straight for Earth, a comet that has the size and the potential to destroy the Earth. And so they go out and they realize their responsibility to warn people about the incoming doom. And as they do that, they encounter people who just don't want to know. And so they try and engage with the US president, they try and engage with the media and social media, and what they come up against is an ignorance that just doesn't want to acknowledge the difficult truth. Because they're worried that if people know, then people will worry. And so the call from the world is, well, don't look up. Because if you don't look up, then you won't know about it. And if you don't know about it, you won't think about it. And if you don't think about it, well, we'll all be okay, won't we? And yet, that way of coping doesn't stop the reality of what is happening in the film. A comet is coming. Coping strategies may make us feel better for a time, but it doesn't stop what's happening around me. And so we can be left with a situation that's anything but peace. So what's our hope? Is there a way that we can know peace? A peace that doesn't depend on circumstances. No, a peace that doesn't change when my feelings change. A peace that isn't that everything around me is okay all of the time. Sadly, I just don't think that's possible. But a peace that even when circumstances aren't okay, even when I'm not necessarily feeling it, is it possible to have a peace that we can know? You see, the message of the Christian faith is that it is possible. And so we're going to have a look at the verses, the sentences that James just read out from us. They're from a book in the Bible called Psalms. Psalms is a collection of songs. And so we have a song before us, a collection of songs which tell us timeless truths about God, about us, about his creation, through the means of song. Rob's already mentioned that so often different areas of the world will use songs to express how we're feeling and the truths around us. If you're a football fan, you'll know recently, sadly, Liverpool won the Premier League. Last week, when they won the Premier League, I found out, I don't know who counts this, but there you go. I found out during the match they sang 45 different songs. Football's a 90-minute game. 45 songs. That's a song every other minute. That's only just longer than a service. Imagine that, coming to church. 45 songs. That's song going for the band, if we were to do that kind of thing. But they're singing their songs because they want to express the truths about their team, and so they're singing, "We're gonna win the league," and they want to express how they're feeling. Here we have a song written. A song that was likely written during a time of crisis and turmoil. A time when there certainly wasn't peace. And yet in it, it tells us about how we can know peace. But before we can know peace, the psalmist in our song, he outlines various threats that can cause worry. The threats that can cause worry. First, he shows us the threat from nature around us, verses 2 and 3. Natural disasters, they're terrible events. When we see the scenes like those from Myanmar in March, we cannot help but our hearts go out to them. And yet we also realize the power of them, that as humanity we're helpless. And so here the writer uses imagery of the mountains and the waters to speak about the most formidable trouble maybe ever possible or imaginable. Verse 2, he says, "Therefore we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging." Mountains, it's an image of security and permanence. If you've ever been for a walk amongst the mountains, there's probably moments when you kind of step back and look at the mountains and go, wow. Waters hold great power. In fact, throughout the Bible, waters often represent chaos and force. If you've ever seen a little child kind of try and make their way into the waves and just keep getting knocked back. And yet this is a greater force. I remember a couple of years ago trying to go swimming in the sea in rough waters and just trying to get out there and the waves just knocking me back. And eventually as I went out, knocking me right over. Water has power. Here the mountains are being overwhelmed by the waters. It's a metaphor that speaks maybe to the worst possible nightmare. A metaphor that's speaking of the imagery of the natural world falling apart at the seams. But the writer says it's not just the threat from nature around us, but we also see the threat from others around us. Verse 6, nations are in uproar, kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice and the earth melts. It's language of warfare. It's language of human against human. It's from the writer's point of view, it's being aware of the threat of the nations and the people that are surrounding them and the threat that they can attack at any moment. It's sadly the reality that we see around the world at the moment. The writer wants to highlight the threats that can cause worry. The threat of the nature around us, the threat from others around us. And so just as we've mentioned, can have our worries and uncertainties that cause a lack of peace, so here the writer highlights worries that can cause an immense lack of peace. And yet in the midst of these threats of uncertainty, he shows us there is hope that can bring peace. I wonder, as James read it out, I wonder if you noticed the kind of back and forth, the alternation between the dangers that we've already seen in verses 2 and 3 and 6, and then the safety that's mentioned in verse 1 and verse 4 and 5 and verse 7. Along with that, you probably noticed the kind of repeated refrain that we get in verse 7 and then repeated right at the end at verse 11. And those same truths that are put in a different way at the start in verse 1. Here, if you like, the writer's saying, here is what you need to know right at the beginning and right at the end and right at the center in the middle of everything that is going on. Verse 1, God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Verse 7, the Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. And then repeated at the end in verse 11. You see, for the writer of this song, for him to know peace, well, what he does is he reminds us of who God is. He says, the Lord God, well, he is strong. Verse 1. He is almighty, verse 7 and 11. Almighty, it's a picture of that he is unbeatable. He is almighty. He is all strong, over and above any power that might oppose him. The power of the natural world, the power of people. But not only does the writer highlight that God is strong, but you notice he also highlights that God is with us, verse 7. He's described as our refuge and help in verse 1. Refuge, it's the picture, it's the idea of finding shelter in something. It's the picture of the army retreating and running back to a strong tower that cannot be toppled. The writer's saying whatever might happen, we can always run to our refuge in God. Verses 4 and 5 speak of this city of God. It's a place where God is. And it's an image of strength and security. Do you see how it's described in verse 5? God is within her, so she will not fall. Compare that to the mountains in verse 2 that are falling, or the kingdoms in verse 6 that are falling. But this place, well, because God is with her, within her, well, she will not fall. For the people, for when this song was written, that place they hoped would be the city of Jerusalem. But sadly, as the years went on, Jerusalem did fall. And so this song, it points to a city that is beyond Jerusalem or beyond any other physical city. Here is a vision of the future. And that picture is added to in verse 9 when the songwriter describes a time when God will end all wars and all battles, when he will break and burn the instruments of battle. The songwriter wants to show that God is strong and God is with us. And so shows how we can respond to that. He says, verse 2, "Do not fear. Therefore we will not fear." In fact, the writer says, even in the most dire of circumstances, when creation is falling apart at the seams, because God is strong and because God is with us, we need not fear. And notice, it's not we need not fear because everything that's going wrong around us will be sorted out right now. No, actually, it's we need not fear even though the worst might happen. This is a you need not fear. You can know peace even in the midst of circumstances that might be hard and bad. Do not fear, verse 2. And then come and see, verse 8. It's an invitation to see who God is, to see all that God has done and will do. Come and see. And then verse 10, be still and know. I think primarily this is a call to the nations and the people surrounding God's people, those who are opposed to God and opposed to God people, for almost God, almost as a strong rebuke to go, stop, be still, and know that I am God. I am in charge. But it's also a call to everyone, to all, to be still and know. And not be still in a kind of form of meditation where we kind of let everything leave our mind and just be quiet. No, it's more a be still in an awestruck wonder at who God is. This past week, we've had a birthday in the Woodbridge household, and as Lily came back from preschool, we got a present ready for her. And as she came into her room and as she saw it, she went, and just stopped almost in her tracks, couldn't say a word. Now, it wasn't that good. It was from Facebook Marketplace. It's second hand. But she doesn't need to know that, because as she comes in, she just goes, and it's for me. God in this psalm is saying, be still and know. Almost a, and he's for me. The psalmist wants us to know that God is strong and God loves us and is with us. So we need not fear. So be still and know. And yet the challenge can be, as we read this, the challenge can be, but what about now? Because it's all very well reading a song that was written thousands and thousands of years ago. It's all very well a song pointing forward to a time in the future when God will bring all things under him. But what about now? What about now as we go through the uncertainties that cause a lack of peace? What about now, someone who can be a refuge and a strength? And yet this song does point to one who is a refuge where we can find rest and shelter. This song does point to one who is strong, strong enough to have power over the natural world. When Jesus walked on this earth, he showed his strength over the natural world. That as he was stood in a boat in the middle of a raging storm that was causing the most hardened of fishermen to fear for their life, all he needs to do is say, quiet, be still, echoing the words of this psalm, and all was calm. Jesus shows immense strength. And yet Jesus shows a tender love. And he shows he can be our refuge. When he says, come to me and I can give you rest. Even when you're feeling weary and burdened and feel like the weight of the world is on your shoulders, I can give you rest. And how long for? Well, he reassures us that surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. You see, this songwriter speaks about a God who is strong and speaks about a God who is with us always and is our refuge. And it is a wonderful thing that he is both, because so often we can see around the world people who are strong, but they're not for us and we fear that strength. Or we can have people who we know are for us and love us, but they might not have the strength and the power to do anything. And here we have a God who is both. He is strong and he is with us. And in Jesus we see that this God isn't an unbelievable God. And this God isn't a distant God who isn't interested in us. In Jesus we see God become man to show us that strength. And to show us that he loves us. And is with us. What might this then look like for us? In the here and now, in the day-to-day challenges and uncertainties we face, whether that's uncertainties in the world around us or uncertainties in our own country or the uncertainty in here and the lack of peace I can feel. Know that the Lord is in control, that this world isn't spiraling out of control. And so as we know these truths, it can help us to avoid two dangers, if you like. A first danger of kind of hiding and shutting out the world around us. And so this song says we need not fear because God is in charge. And a second danger that almost says we need a panicked activism as if everything depends on me or on you. Sure, we should be active. Sure, we're called to play our part, but it's not down to you. We can take the weight off our shoulders because God is in charge. He is strong and he is with us. So we don't need to fear, but we can be still and know him. Let me pray. Father God, thank you for these timeless truths that we see in this song. Thank you that even in the midst of uncertainties and difficulties and hard times, thank you that you are strong and you are with us. And thank you that we see that in the person and the life of Jesus Christ. So please, Lord, help us to trust in that. And as we trust, help us not to fear, but to be still and to know you. And as a result, no peace that comes from you. Amen.
See, we've got a couple of minutes just to ask Woody some questions. Thank you so much for participating and sending your questions in. Let's begin with this one. What is the river reference in verse 4? And what's the application of the referral to the city of God today?
Good spot. River reference in verse 4. I think two things. One, I think it's showing a bit of a contrast. If you notice in verse 3, the waters are roaring and foaming. Water there is chaos and powerful and causing trouble. And then suddenly there's a change into verse 4. A river whose streams make glad the city of God. Sounds like a river I want to be near compared to the waters of verse 3. So I think it is showing a contrast in the kind of danger verse 3 and the safety verse 4. And then I think this is pointing forward, like I said, to the future heavenly city of the new creation. And I think this is what helped me see that this isn't necessarily talking about the physical city, historical city of Jerusalem, because there is no river that runs through it. But actually Revelation 22 speaks about a river that flows through the new heavenly city to come. And so I think that's then when the psalmist is pointing us forward to say, there will be a future city of God where God is within her, where she cannot fall, and God will help her. And so it's pointing us forward to a city of total safety, of total refuge, of total strength. What's the application for today? I think it is kind of lift our eyes off today, look forward to a place where there will be total safety, where there is no threat from the physical world around us, no threat from humanity around us. There will be one day a wonderful city of strength and refuge and safety.
Thank you very much. Next question. How do we support our friends when they might know these truths but struggle to remember that God is in charge when going through tough times?
I think come back to a psalm like this to help us that even in the midst of tough times, we can remind ourselves God is our refuge and strength. An ever-present help is a wonderful verse, verse 1, isn't it? An ever-present help in times of trouble. I think it's right to be praying for God to end tough times and take us out of tough times, whilst also knowing the reality that God doesn't promise that. In fact, he says that if you're going to follow me, you're going to experience tough times. And so actually, rather than focusing on me and the tough times, I'd want to help lift my friend's eyes off our circumstances and ourselves to God and his promises and his goodness. And if we want a reminder of how God can work through tough times, I think look at the hardest time that ever was, Jesus, the Son of God, dying on the cross, and seeing how God brought good out of the most immense human evil and suffering that there ever was, that God was still in charge then, and good came out of it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, and I think you're hinting at this at the beginning there, but actually it's a great psalm to say to ourselves, isn't it? It's a great psalm to share with others.
Yeah.
I know in church history it's been a great help to sort of key figures, so thank you. Any tips on action in this? It's easier to say don't freak out, which I think is serious, Rob. Any tips for action in this? It's easy to say don't freak out, but a lot more difficult actually not to freak out.
Here's one practical tip which I read about this week and was kind of, if I didn't speak, keep going on, I would have included it in the sermon, but Q&A gives a perfect example to give this as an application. Here's something I read that also Rosie, my wife, when she went through challenges of anxiety and worry, helped her really well. Imagine two circles. One circle that is, I'm going to get my terms wrong, 6 foot in radius, another one that is 6 inches in radius. And within those circles, put in this smaller circle any worries or things that are causing you to freak out that you can control. And put in the 6 foot radius circle any worries or things that are concerning you that you that are outside of your control but are in God's control. Rose said when she did this, and I've done this personally as well, it just helped me to be able to step back from the things that I have no control over and go, I give them over to you, God. There is no point, no need me worrying myself in what am I going to do about these, because I can't. And so I hand them over to you. And so then the smaller circle of 6 inches, I go, right, what is the tangible next step I could do that might help me in this situation that's causing me worry? And it was just a helpful thing to separate the things out, to know God is in control of all things and is in the midst of all things. And it takes me out of the things that I can't control, and helps me to remember the things that maybe I can do something about. And so to concentrate on the smaller things in the smaller circle.
Thank you. There's
a very practical thing that I've found helpful.
Very helpful. Do grab Woody afterwards. Do grab me or anyone who looks like they know what they're doing here.